Summit, and we've got Brendan Brazier on the call tonight. And Brendan is one of only a few professional athletes in the world that is a 100% plant-based diet person. And he's also a professional Ironman triathlete, best-selling author on performance nutrition, and the creator of an award-winning line of whole food nutritional products that maybe some of you have heard called Vega. He's also a two-time Canadian 50-kilometer ultra-marathon champion, and he's had some good results at Ironman Canada, where he's finished 21st, 14th, and 11th, and he's taken 8th place at Ironman Utah as well. So, you know, he's definitely a guy who can walk the walk and talk the talk on this subject for sure. He's performed at a top level, and that is the person who we got on here. So, Brendan, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So, basically, why don't we start off with first, you're a vegan. Why don't you explain to everyone out there what a vegan exactly is?
Sure. It's someone who doesn't eat any animal products at all. So not just not eating meat, which would be vegetarian, also not eating anything that comes from an animal. So any kind of dairy products or eggs as well.
Okay. And so basically, why don't you talk a little bit about what are some of the reasons that people would do this for a health standpoint in terms of why is it a good call to be a vegan?
Well, a lot of people are getting into it now for reasons such as osteoporosis and arthritis when they're getting older later in life, if they're noticing that their bone density is not very good, if they're worried about fractures, because it's more alkaline diet, so it's much healthier for the bones, and it's really good for reducing inflammation. So anyone who's older and concerned about arthritis as well, they usually, the ones who give that a try, the vegan diet, really find that it works well. But for me, this all started for performance. When I was around 15, I just wanted to be a better athlete, and I tried all different kinds of diets, and some worked okay, some didn't work well at all. And then I tried the completely vegan diet, and first it didn't work well. I was hungry all the time and tired, and I wasn't recovering well, and I didn't feel very good. But then I learned how to do it properly, and I definitely noticed a big improvement. I could train much more, and I improved faster, so that's what sold me on it. And that was 18 years ago now since I first tried it, and like I say, it didn't work great right away, but over a couple of years of looking into it and trying it, I learned its subtleties, and it worked really well for me.
Okay. I'm sorry. You know what? I muted out the line and things like that on there, and I think people kind of misheard what you said were two of the benefits that you talked about in the beginning in terms of just being alkaline and bone density and all that. Can you just repeat that first real quick?
Yeah, sure. A lot of people who are getting older these days are getting really good results with a plant-based vegan diet as well, because it's an alkaline-forming diet, which is very beneficial for people who are concerned about bone density, because when you keep your body more alkaline, it helps keep the bones stronger, whereas an acidic-forming diet, when it's high in processed foods or animal products, can really leach the calcium out of the bones, it weakens the bones, and it increases the risk of any kind of fracture and osteoporosis as well. And also, an alkaline-forming diet will help reduce inflammation, so it's good for anyone with arthritis and anyone who's got knee pain or any kind of joint pain at all, any kind of inflammation. People will notice a big difference within usually 48 hours of eating a more alkaline diet, and a plant-based diet is definitely more alkaline than a standard meat-based diet.
Okay, great. And you were talking a little bit about some of the, you know, you're having some issues in the beginning. It didn't really work out for you in terms of a vegan diet. So what are some of the pitfalls that you made? I'm sure they're pretty common to people who try that diet out in the beginning.
Yeah. I think a lot of people make the same mistakes that I made. And one of them was just filling up and refined carbohydrates. I ate tons of pasta and rice and bread and just loaded up that way. And I didn't feel that great. I was tired a lot of the time, too, and it was kind of strange. I was reading some sports nutrition books, and I basically learned about the whole calories out, calories in train of thought, and I figured that since a calorie is a measure of food energy, the more calories I ate, the more energy I would have, but it just wasn't working out that way, and I was eating I was eating a lot of calories. I was getting them mostly from peanut butter and bread and pasta and all these highly refined foods that have tons of calories, but they don't really have lots of nutrition. Plus, your body has to work really hard to digest and assimilate those types of refined foods and build digestive enzymes as well. And a healthy body can do that, but it requires energy. And if you're spending energy to get energy out of your food, obviously the net gain from the food you've eaten is going to be far lower. So it's just like with money, you know, if you spend it, you no longer have it. So if you spend lots of energy, you have less. And I realized that was something I was doing wrong, just eating the wrong types of foods and getting the wrong types of calories.
Good deal. Good deal. All right. So what kind of things did you add to your diet that you found made a difference in terms of the way you felt in your performance?
Well, pretty much what I did is looked into the things I was eating and just basically tried to find out what was lacking. And I found quite a few things was lacking. I found complete protein, vitamin B12, iron, calcium, omega-3 fatty acids. All these things really were not part of my diet. So I found plant-based sources for each of those, blended them together, and then had a blender drink every day after my workout. And within a few weeks, I was feeling much better. I felt as though I was recovering way better. I wasn't hungry all the time. And then it got to the point where I could recover much quicker, and then I could schedule workouts closer together and improve faster. And basically, from there, I just had that blender drink every day, and it evolved a lot over the years. And eventually, that's what became Vega and became a commercially available product 4 years ago. But that's how it started off, and it was really just highly raw, so lots of enzymes. And also just very nutrient-dense foods as well, not refined. They're good whole food sources.
Excellent, excellent. All right, you know, since you brought up Vega, why don't you explain to everyone what exactly Vega is now? I mean, you kind of explained it right there, but give us a little taste of what it is.
Sure. Well, the main product is a replica of that blender drink, and it's called Vega Complete Whole Food Health Optimizer. And it's been out in Canada for 4 years now and the U.S. for about 3 years. And it's basically an all-in-one. It's probably the best way to describe it. So it's protein, essential fats, fiber, greens, enzymes, probiotics, vitamins, minerals, something called maca, which is a root vegetable. And it's really good for helping to reduce cortisol levels. And aside just from Vega specifically, but just reducing cortisol levels is something that I found is really, really important when I was training huge. My first year of huge training volume was 97, and I was preparing to try and race pro the next year, and I was training around 35 to 40 hours a week, and it was strange because I was going well for 3 or 4 months, but then I started to get really tired. But the more tired I got, the worse my quality of sleep got, which I thought was strange. I figured the more tired I would be, I thought that I'd sleep better, but the reason for that was that cortisol, the stress hormone, was high from physical stress that the training places on the body. And I had pretty burned out adrenal glands just from lots of training. And I learned about maca and started adding that to my blender drink, and it really helped. It didn't help instantly. It's not a quick fix, but it's something that can really help nourish your adrenals. It's high in trace minerals. It was just a really good food. So that really helped bring down cortisol, and then I got back on track and was able to cut back on the amount of sleep I needed, and it was definitely a needed thing. So I think any athlete can benefit from that. So I added that to Vega, and chlorella, which is an algae that's from Japan. It's high in B vitamins, which are important for energy conversion, and B12 as well, which a lot of vegetarians don't usually get enough of, and it's really neat too, because it's almost 70% protein, yet it's alkaline forming. It's because it's an algae, so that was really cool too. So that's basically what Vega has in it now, in its final commercial version.
Awesome, awesome. You talked a little bit about there that, you know, the results that you saw with adding those things into your diet. It wasn't like, you know, in terms of trying to reduce your cortisol, wasn't, you know, didn't happen for you right away. So when you do things with a raw natural diet, you know, more plant-based diet, how long does it take for those results to start coming through and people really seeing a difference?
Well, it can actually take quite a while, and that's why I think quite a few people don't stick with it, and especially athletes, you know, a lot of athletes are wanting quick results, and, you know, if you drink coffee, you feel it immediately. If you eat sugary food, you feel it right away. You get the stimulation, which gives you energy now, and it stimulates your adrenals, but over time, that fatigues the adrenals, and stimulation always leads to fatigue. So sometimes it's actually better when you don't feel energized right away after eating something. With good whole foods, it can take quite a while. In some cases, people will feel worse before they feel better because their body has to cleanse and detox. And you may go through a stage where you actually feel pretty bad. You feel bloated and maybe a mild headache and flu-like symptoms or a skin rash, any kind of detox symptom for sometimes a few weeks. And if people are older, like someone who's, in his 60s or so, if he or she's eaten a standard American diet for 30 or 40 years and then tries this, it's going to take a while. So definitely be patient with it. And I've seen so many athletes who went through a stage where they tried to eat better, they tried to eat a plant-based diet, and they don't anymore because they just didn't feel good. But I think if people take it in small steps, don't try and do it all overnight, don't try and completely change over right away, I think that's the way to do it. Because any kind of change is stress, even if it is a positive change, even if you are just switching over to a better, healthier diet, your body still has to adapt to it. You know, it's like running 5 kilometers. It's good, but if you can't run 2 kilometers, it's not going to do, you know, it's actually going to do you more harm than good. So taking small steps, I think, is the best way to make it permanent.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and you also wrote a book called The Thrive Diet, and basically what is that all about? Is it about the plant-based diet that we're talking about right now?
Yeah, it's kind of the general premise of it is reducing stress through better nutrition, and I just think that stress reduction is such a huge, huge thing for athletes and for anyone, really, because if you trace it back far enough, any problem, any disease, any overtraining, anything at all is a result of more stress than your body can handle. And through good nutrition, you can actually reduce stress, which brings down cortisol levels. And cortisol also, it's very destructive when it gets high. I'm sure most people who have experienced overtraining, which is probably a lot of the listeners, have experienced high cortisol levels. And that what happens is it makes it very difficult to sleep. You don't get into a deep phase of sleep called delta, which is a deep rejuvenating phase. And therefore, you wake up, you feel tired, you're not ready to get out of bed. You crave coffee and sugar and these stimulating foods for the quick fix. And then if you drink coffee or eat sugar, it perpetuates the cycle and it just keeps going and going. So you have to break that cycle by bringing down cortisol. And the best way to do that is eating good, easily digestible, nutrient-dense, plant-based foods. And that's kind of the general premise of the book is bringing down, keeping cortisol low through good nutrition. And it's actually been rebranded that will come out in January. It's just going to be called Thrive now. It's not going to be called The Thrive Diet. And the subtitle is The Vegan Nutrition Guide to Optimal Performance in Sports and Life.
Awesome. Good stuff. A lot of people, you know, they see, you know, they hear about the vegan diet and they question how they're going to get certain nutrients. And I guess the three big ones are protein, B12, and iron. So why don't you go over how you can get each of those three, and we'll start with protein and how you can get sufficient amounts of protein through a plant-based diet.
Sure. It's definitely one of the questions I get the most, and it's actually quite a lot easier than a lot of people might think, and it's all about quality. It's not so much about quantity. I weigh about 165 pounds, and I should, according to a lot of conventional sports nutrition books, get way more protein than I do. I probably get around 70 grams of protein a day, which is less than half of what a lot of those books suggest I should have. But like I said, I find it has to do with quality. And a big salad, for example, has a lot of protein in amino acid form, and that's the key, is getting as much protein as you can in amino acid form. And so that will be in things like leafy green vegetables, anything that's sprouted as well. I talk about that in the book as well, sprouting things like buckwheat or amaranth, quinoa, are really good to sprout because they're actually seeds, they're not grains, all of those things, so they do sprout. And spinach, for example, any dark leafy green vegetable is going to be around 45% protein, which is very high. And, yeah, you have to eat a fair amount. You have to eat a pretty big salad to get a lot of protein, but when you start looking at a salad as a meal as opposed to just a side dish, you can really get a substantial amount from that. And like I say, you can cut back your protein intake by up to 50% if the quality is good. And if it's an amino acid form, like in leafy greens and sprouted foods, your body doesn't actually have to convert it from protein to amino acids because your body can't use protein. It has to break it into amino acids first. So if you get it in amino acid form, that's one less step for your body to do. And that means you're going to have a higher net gain, as I call it in the book, from the food because you just don't have to expend energy doing that extra step. So that's a significant part. And I used to use soy protein when I first started making my blender drink, but I learned that soy protein is isolated. It's not a whole food, and it is quite acid-forming. So I switched over to hemp protein, and hemp is a whole food. It's complete. It is a complete protein, and it's alkaline-forming because it's green. That's because it's full of chlorophyll, and chlorophyll is extremely alkaline-forming. So hemp became the base of my blender drink, and then I added yellow pea protein and brown rice protein to balance it out. Yellow pea protein is high in something called glutamic acid, which helps convert carbohydrate to energy. And, of course, that's really important for athletes. The Atkins diet got popular because people found when they ate carbohydrate, they tended to put on a lot of weight. But the main reason they were putting on weight, one is they were eating refined carbohydrate, but also because they didn't have enough glutamic acid-rich foods in their diet. So things like lentils, legumes, beans, or peas help convert carbohydrate into energy so you get more energy, and it's not stored as body fat, so you get leaner. So you kill two birds with one stone when you get enough of those types of foods in your diet. And then rice protein has tryptophan, and that's a precursor to serotonin that helps improve mood and mental clarity and just helps you feel better in general. So I combined those three proteins, hemp, pea, and rice, and that became kind of my base in my blender drink, and that's what the base of Vega is for that reason. And I found with that and a big salad every day, I got plenty of protein. I was able to build muscle and maintain it even during lots of long, hard training, and my strength actually increased. And my weight did go down a little bit eating less protein, but the main thing was strength stayed and even, like I say, increased a bit. And then, of course, strength-to-weight ratio improved. And as an endurance athlete, that's what it's all about. It's about being strong and light.
Yes, yes. All right, good. All right, why don't you explain to us then B12 and how you get that in a plant-based diet?
I get my B12 from chlorella. That's the algae I was talking about before from Japan that has a lot of B vitamins in it, and it does have enough B12. If you get around 2.5 grams of chlorella each day, or even you can probably even get away with less than that. B12 is extremely important, but you don't need a lot of it. It's the sort of thing where more is not better. If you have enough, then you're fine. And nutritional yeast, that's another one. I put that on some things. I use that in some recipes as well that are in my book. And it's a good thing just to put on salad or put in some kind of raw soup, and it just gives it a good flavor. And I guess those two, chlorella and nutritional yeast, are the main source of the B12. Some seaweed has it too, and I eat quite a bit of seaweed. So those three things.
Okay, and the last of the three that I was talking about there, iron. Where do you get that from?
Yeah, iron was it was a bit tricky for me for a while. I became borderline anemic probably 7 or 8 years ago, and the doctor suggested I take supplements, but I really didn't want to do that. So I found just a really simple solution. Pumpkin seeds, raw pumpkin seeds, have a lot of iron, and if you soak them, they are easier to digest, and actually you can get the iron out of them more easily. Your body can digest it better. So I put about 1/4 cup of soaked pumpkin seeds on my salad each day, and then I had it with the citrus dressing because citrus has vitamin C in it, and vitamin C helps the absorption of iron. So I would do that maybe 4 or 5 times a week, and then within about 6 months my iron was back really strong, and I've never had a problem since. It's been really good ever since then, and that's all I've done is just that, and really simple solution.
Okay. You talked a little bit about supplements there. So are you a believer in not taking any types of added supplements then?
Well, I actually used to take a lot. I took a whole bunch of supplements up until around 4 years ago, and I just – it was funny, actually. One day my friend asked me if taking all those supplements actually worked, and I didn't have an answer. So I kind of had to rethink things because I didn't know. I just kind of had a blind faith that they were actually doing something. So I stopped taking them, and nothing bad happened. My energy stayed the same. My training stayed the same. My blood work stayed the same. So I just got off them. And I know some people really like supplements, and I think that's fine. I'm certainly not against them. But I know that for people who want to try and do it without supplements, it can certainly be done. Like I said, I haven't taken supplements for around 4 years. I just eat really well, have a serving of egg a day, and that's it. And I feel good. And I, of course, know that you can go that route if you want it.
Okay, cool. Basically, where can people get this Vega drink and get your book? Where's a good resource to do that? Is it your website?
Yeah, you can't actually order Vega on the website just yet, but you can get it in Whole Foods or really any health food store. The book, as of January, will be in all Barnes & Noble and Borders, and it's on Amazon now. It can be pre-ordered on Amazon.com, and people can check out my website, too. There's links to all those things. My website's brendanbrazier.com, as well as thrivediet.com, and then there's myvega.com as well.
Cool. All right. Now, in terms of when you're actually training and you're out on the road or you're out running or whatever and you need extra calories in terms of a sports drink or whatever, what do you suggest? Because a lot of people out there, you know, they have a hard time taking in something, for instance, such as Gatorade or some of the other products out there. What do you do to kind of, you know, keep it natural and keep yourself going when you're training?
Yeah, I tried to come up with something for a while. It was I wasn't doing so well with Gatorade and some of the artificial type drinks, so I just made up my own. They're really simple. I mean, all the sport drink really is sugar and electrolytes. So a really good one is coconut water. You can buy coconut water in pretty much any health food store, either in the coconuts and crack them open or in Tetra Paks. And I have a recipe in the book for a sport drink with coconut water. It's really simple. You just take coconut water, squeeze in a little lemon juice, a little lime juice, and that's about it. If you want a little more to it, you can blend in a date, which gives it more sugar and a little more staying power. But that's about it. It's really basic. Or energy gels, too. I take some agave nectar and blend it in with a date, bit of lemon and lime juice again, and it's really good. Put that in a gel flask, and it's simple. It's good, quick, clean energy. Works really well, and it's, of course, natural, too, and your body can digest that way easier than a lot of those artificial ones.
Cool. All right. Good deal. All right. We actually get a lot of people who are actually on the webcast as well. That's where most of our callers are this evening, or listeners, and they're asking a bunch of questions here. You want to try answering a few?
Sure.
Okay, cool. All right. We're going to start with Don from Alabama, and he's saying here, we always hear that a glass or two of wine is good for the body and soul. Is any alcohol at all good for the athlete?
I personally don't drink, not for reasons because I think it would hurt my performance, but I just never really got too into it. But I don't think it's bad. I think there's a few things to look at. It is somewhat acid forming, so you know you wouldn't want to drink a lot each day. It's some people respond better to it than others. So know yourself, know if your body reacts okay to it, and of course make sure you're well hydrated before and after because it will take fluid out of your body. So if you can stay well hydrated and you just do it once in a while, I definitely don't think it's going to hurt your performance.
Okay, good deal. Another person here, we got Kathy from Chester, and she wants to know, what are the best foods to prevent inflammation with?
Yeah, that's a good question. That was something I was looking into a while ago, and some of the good ones are, well, I guess the best overall one is just anything that's alkaline. So anything that's green, anything with chlorophyll in it, which is basically the green pigment in plants. So greens drinks are really good, like chlorella. I sometimes mix that into water, and we'll have that after a workout just to help keep alkaline, which is going to reduce inflammation. Also, things like ginger are really good for reducing inflammation. Turmeric is another one. And sometimes turmeric, though, it's got a pretty strong taste. I would sometimes put that into my blender drink, and it was just a bit too much. But I make a really good ginger pear smoothie for after a workout if I'm feeling a bit inflamed and feel as though I have soft tissue injuries. And it's just basically a tablespoon of fresh ginger, a ripe pear, a banana, and a scoop or two of natural flavored vega, or you could just, if you didn't have that, you could just use some hemp protein and some flax, and then, yeah, just blend that up with some ice. It tastes really good, and that will definitely help reduce inflammation.
Good deal. All right. Let me ask you another question here that we got here. Basically, it's just on organic foods versus non-organic foods. What's your take on that?
Well, I think if you can get foods grown without herbicides and pesticides, that's really important because obviously that's just going to be an extra stress on your body having to deal with toxins, basically, and therefore that's going to bring up cortisol, and that's, of course, you know, going to trigger a whole bunch of problems. But I think people need to also just be aware that sometimes non-organic is actually okay as long as it's grown on herbicides and pesticides. It's just that certification, organic certification, is really expensive, and a lot of small farmers can't actually afford that. So I've been to some farmers markets where the farmers are there with their local food that's grown 50 miles away, and they just can't afford certification, but it's still great food that doesn't have herbicides or pesticides. And I know some people, like I've seen some farmers markets where people would go and ask a farmer if it's local and organic, and they say it's local and it's organic, but I don't have certification. So then the people who are looking for certified organic would leave and go and maybe buy it at Walmart where it's grown in China and it's certified organic, but not really the best solution, because then, of course, it's, you know, been out of the ground for a long time, so that it will lose nutrients, and you got to look at those different factors too. So I think when you can get organic, great. But if you can't, just try and get stuff that's grown without herbicides and pesticides and is local as well, if possible.
All right, good deal. All right, we got Don from Baltimore, and he's asking, do you subscribe to a zone diet type approach to nutrition, balancing carbs with protein, and what about the glycemic index? So I guess we'll just start with the first one on that, and talking about the zone diet and balancing carbs with protein, and the zone diet is mostly protein, I believe, right?
Yeah, it was actually, I did experiment with that a bit back when, I guess it was around 96 or so. And it was really quite a bit higher in protein than I felt worked well for me. I mean, I eat definitely a lot more carbohydrate than it would suggest, and I eat mostly sugary carbohydrates, which is kind of against what it says too. I know with myself, I like to get most of my carbohydrate from simple carbohydrates, so fruit, lots of fruit, as opposed to starchy foods that your body has to break down and convert into sugar. Your body can't use complex carbohydrate. It has to first convert it to sugar. So if you just give it sugar in the form of healthy fruit, it will be able to burn it more efficiently and not have to spend energy converting it. So, I mean, I do find that when I'm doing lots of long, easy training, I will eat less fruit and I will eat more protein and more fat, but I'll get my protein from, of course, plant-based sources, hemp, the pea protein, the rice protein, the lentils, legumes, and the carbohydrate from pseudo grains that I talked a bit about before, like the amaranth, quinoa, buckwheat, wild rice, things like that. And then the fat from avocado, hemp oil, flax oil. And it's pretty balanced, but it's definitely lower in protein, but higher in quality of protein than the Zone diet.
Okay. And he also asked, what about the glycemic index?
I think that during exercise, you actually want really high glycemic foods because your body will burn it right away. So dates, for example, are extremely high glycemic, but I think they're really good. I think during especially shorter, harder workouts where you're going to be burning sugar, that's what you want. If you're going to be doing a long, easy bike ride, say that, you know, 5 or 6 hours, you're training for Ironman, then, yeah, you'd want to combine sugary foods with foods that have fiber, essential fat, and protein, which is going to lower the glycemic index. So energy bars that I make and the recipes are in the book are date-based, yet they're quite low glycemic because they're combined with hemp and flax and, you know, things that have essential fats, fiber, and protein to slow down that glycemic index. So it depends on what you're doing, too. And in the book, I have a chart that basically bases the glycemic index on the activity level. So if you're doing short, intense workouts, then you want higher glycemic before and during. And then if you're doing longer, easier stuff, depending on your training, then you would have lower glycemic index.
All right, good deal. Yeah, I'm a big fan of dates when I train too. Well, I think they're great. So
yeah.
Just wanted to throw that in there. All right, and then what about, you know, we got someone right here asking, Grant from BC Canada wants to know what blood type are you? And he's read that type A's do the best with a vegan diet. Do you agree?
I'm actually type O, so I do know a bit about the blood type diet, and I know that O is supposed to be the carnivore, so obviously that doesn't really hold true for me. But I do find that if I don't eat much protein, I don't feel as good. So maybe if you want to look at the blood type diet and think, well, maybe it doesn't just mean it doesn't just mean to eat more meat if you're O type, but eat more protein. And I find that if I eat foods that are really low and good quality protein and I just eat fruit, that I don't feel as good and don't have as much energy. So some people say there's nothing to the blood type diet, but then some people do. So it just depends on your take on that. Like I say, for me, it doesn't really hold true.
Okay. And that's good. Then we got Lewis Tharp from West Point, and he wants to know, what's your opinion on omega-3, 6, and 9 versus just taking omega-3? I've heard the body has a lot of 6 and 9 already, and you can take too much, but you know, you can never have enough of omega-3. Good question.
Yeah, and that's something that I'm hearing more and more of because, yeah, it's true. Most North Americans get too much omega-6 and omega-3. Just because it's in a lot of fried foods and refined foods, fries and things like that have quite a lot of that. So what's been happening is people have been suggesting that people have more things like fish oil and flax oil that have more omega-3 to balance that out. But my take on that is that if you're getting way too much of those other foods that have too much omega-6 in them and 9, then just cut back on that and don't try and balance that out by taking a whole bunch of omega-3. The World Health Organization brought out a report a while ago that said that the optimal amount is about 4 times omega-6 to omega-3. So we definitely need more omega-6 than omega-3, but I think that it's just best to try and balance it out through a good, healthy diet as opposed to taking an omega-3 supplement.
Okay, good deal. See, Dawn in Baltimore chimed in here with another question. He wants to know, what's your take on human growth hormone? I came across HGH precursor drinks in the past, and I've also heard lately that they're a hoax. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, I've read a bit about those, and I think that anything like that that's going to stimulate growth hormone without really knowing specifically what that one's about, I would be a little bit skeptical and probably steer clear of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's two really good ways to release growth hormone. One is when you go to sleep. If you haven't had a sugary snack within a couple hours before, your body will release human growth hormone. And also exercise, intense exercise, releases growth hormone as well. So even if you're an endurance athlete and you're training for Ironman, you still want a few workouts in there where you do really short, quick, intense bursts and some weight training too where you lift heavier weights. That's going to release growth hormone as well. So those two things are key. And, of course, if you can have a nap, I know that's hard for a lot of people, but when I was training full-time, I was really diligent about taking a nap each day, and that would be because then obviously you get another boost of growth hormone release. And I know some athletes who set their alarm so that they would wake up several times throughout the night just so they could fall back to sleep and then have another release of that growth hormone. Of course, that only works if you can fall asleep easily. But, yeah, sleep and intense exercise are good ways to release that.
Okay. Gretchen wants to know, do you eat honey?
No, I don't eat honey. I found that agave nectar is really good, similar to honey in terms of consistency, but it's a little bit better in that it's lower glycemic index. And I just never really got into honey. And, of course, you know, being from bees, too, I guess it can really be considered vegan.
Okay. Why don't you, I think a lot of people, you know, they like to ask this question, you know, when you were training heavily, doing Ironman and things like that, what did a day look like in terms of what you consumed in one day, types of meals, how many times a day, type deal?
Well, I got into grazing, pretty early in my career. I felt that when I ate big meals, I didn't feel as good. I would just feel that there's so much blood in the stomach, of course, after eating a big meal that it can't be in other parts of your body clearing out waste products and delivering oxygen. And I found that my recovery was way better when I ate smaller meals and just ate them throughout the day. So I aim to try and never get really hungry and never get really full. So just always be feeling just about right. So after a swim workout in the morning, I would usually have a smoothie. That would be the first thing, that one I was telling you about,
mm-hmm.
that just had a fruit base, and then it was blended in with all the different things I put in it. And then throughout the day, I would graze mostly on fruit and energy bars, too, that I would make for myself. Like I say, the recipes in the book, they're really simple to make. They're raw. You just make them in the food processor, and you can make a big batch that will last 3 or 4 months, and it only takes about an hour to make. So I would do that, and they're cheap too. You can get the ingredients for really cheap in the bulk section, and so I would graze on those, and then big salad every night for sure with lots of sprouts and avocado, and I'd make my own dressing, and that would be kind of my main meal. But yeah, other than that, it would be not even really sit down meals, just kind of eating as I'm going.
I know people who have been on the raw diet and or do raw type stuff, and they intake quite a lot of fat, not knowingly, through lots of nuts and seeds and things like that. I just want to know your take on that and if you think it affects performance and what it does to people.
Yeah, I think some of the highest fat diets out there are the raw diets. I know that it's really easy to kind of let nuts and seeds, like you say, get away on you and just take in way too much fat, and coconut too. Not coconut water, but the coconut milk and coconut meat has a lot of fat in it. So, yeah, I've definitely found that through eating some raw desserts and different things, I was basically all fat, and I felt it too. I didn't digest it well, and I stay away from that. But I think sprouting makes a big difference. If you soak nuts and seeds and those pseudo grains and you sprout them, that really helps with digestibility. And also it will help fill you up quicker, so you just don't have that desire to eat so many and then feel bloated and take in too much fat. But, yeah, I think also, too, I know some people who try and be 100% raw, and they do, when they get really hungry, eat a bunch of nut-based things. And I think at that point, because I don't eat 100% raw, if I had to give a percentage, I'd probably say 85% or so. I would rather go and eat some brown rice with a bit of avocado and some sea salt, as opposed to just eating more nuts and things like that, or a sweet potato, something like that. That's just a good whole food, but is cooked. So, yeah, I think it's important to not get caught up in any certain way of eating, like raw food, for example. Several raw food people I know, I think that becomes a challenge itself, is just staying raw. Whereas I like to, my main thing is performance and feeling good, and I want that to determine how I eat, not how I eat to determine how I feel. So I make sure I'm feeling good, and as opposed to trying to eat a certain way regardless of how I feel.
And can you give an example of some of the cooked things you do eat, as most of your diet is pretty much raw?
Yeah, well, like I say, once in a while, sweet potatoes I think are good, and brown rice once in a while. Sometimes sprouted bread I think is pretty good too. Also, the pea protein and the rice protein that's in Vega is not technically raw. It's not cooked, but when it's milled, the temperature of the milling goes up to around 130, and I think the cutoff for raw is about 110. So I make sure that I tell pure raw foodists that it's not technically raw for that reason. But also things like coconut water, when you buy it in a Tetra Pak, it's been pasteurized, so not technically raw. So small things like that.
Mm-hmm. All right, good deal. And all right, do you take in anything in terms of your fats, in terms of oils, in terms of olive oil or flaxseed oil or anything like that, or do you just take it in more of the whole form, such as nuts and seeds and avocado?
Mostly the whole form, although for salads and salad dressing, I definitely do like oil and vinegar. And there's actually Vega oil now. It's called Vega Antioxidant EFA oil that came out last year. So it's just basically a blend of the oils that I like, which is hemp and flax. And then there's antioxidant oils in there too, like pomegranate seed oil, black cumin seed oil, green tea seed oil, all these different seed oils that are really high in antioxidants, and also pumpkin seed oil, which is high in chlorophyll, so the oil is actually green, so it's also alkaline forming, really good for reducing inflammation too.
Good deal. And you can get that stuff at Whole Foods, you were saying?
Yeah, any Whole Foods, or most other health food stores have it too. And the website is MyVega, MyVega.com.
All right, good deal. And your new book, like you said, is coming out, and that's going to be at Barnes & Noble, right?
Yeah, it'll be in pretty much all the big bookstores, and, of course, Amazon.com has it as well.
Good deal. So it's definitely accessible if you guys are looking for some more info on that. One of the other questions a lot of athletes ask nutritionists and everything like that is, you know, everyone saw Michael Phelps on the Olympics, and everyone saw and heard you know, the rumors that he eats, you know, 15,000 calories a day, and, you know, he eats like McDonald's and tons of pizza and everything like that, and he's ripped, and everyone's like, well, he can do it, so why shouldn't I do it? And, you know, he can, when you're a top athlete, can you just eat whatever, or what's your take on that? Can you just take in anything you want, just because you need calories, or is it important to get high-quality foods, and what are some of the pluses and minuses to that?
Well, yeah, I, of course, do remember reading about that, Michael Phelps' diet, and I mean, obviously, you know, he's doing great on it, but I think also he's young. I think if he did do that all, like, for the next 8 years or so, or for the rest of his life, he'd probably, probably catch up with him, but I do think, too, that what he was eating and that meal plan he gave to one of the reporters, I think, you know, maybe that once or twice. I don't think he eats that every day. I think that's a little extreme. I mean, when I was training 35 to 40 hours a week, I'd probably eat 7 or 8 maybe 8,000 calories a day tops. And I think, you know, 15,000 calories a day, maybe one day here, one day there, but every day, I don't believe that. I think that's a bit of an exaggeration, or he's playing a joke on the reporter or something. But I think to eat that much consistently, I just can't see that happening.
All right, good deal. Dawn from Lethbridge wants to know, sorry to ask obvious, maybe, but what is actually wrong with beef? We have a lot of beef up here in Alberta, and I like it a lot. So that's that. And it's Dawn from AB. That's Alberta, not Alabama. Okay, that's my fault. So what's your take on that?
Well, one thing with meat, and it's not just beef, but any meat, is that it's just highly acidic. So it's going to be it's going to promote inflammation. It's going to be hard on bone health, and it's going to be harder to digest. So your body has to break it down, and by doing that, it has to build digestive enzymes and work harder, and that takes energy. Like I was saying before, it's something that I would call a low net gain food, meaning that your body has to spend a lot of energy to get little in return. And there's just definitely better protein sources for that your body can use more easily. I suggest to people, if they're really interested in improving performance, to just give it a try. And it may not take, like I say, it may not happen overnight, but swap out the beef for some other things, and just see how you go, and just see how your body responds, and give it time. And if, you know, you're really dedicated to trying to improve performance as much as you can, then, be patient with it and just see how your body goes on it.
All right, good deal. All right, and then another question people ask about meat sometimes, too, is what about sushi? Is it good? You know, you hear a lot of times, you know, obviously with fruits and vegetables, it's best if you can, you know, eat them uncooked or as least cooked as possible. And then people have asked me about sushi before, and I didn't really have an answer for that. I was just wondering if you could shed some light on that, if you could.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to digest as well, even though it is raw, because it's a meat. It's harder for the body to actually make use of, and it's one of the big concerns, of course, about not just sushi but any fish is pollution these days. And I'm from Vancouver originally, and on the west coast there, the salmon come back to spawn each year, and salmon are a huge industry there, catching the salmon. But a salmon is born there, and then it swims basically around the whole Pacific Rim, so all up, around Alaska and Japan, and it's the odds of it swimming through polluted water at some point in its life are pretty much 100%. So that's a concern. Of course, mercury is one of the big fears of fish, and for good reason, too. It's something that is pretty serious if you get too much of that. And also, there's, of course, farmed fish, but the nutrition is way, way lower in those, too. So I actually remember a while ago there was some farmed fish that broke out of their pen between Vancouver Island and the mainland, and the seals wouldn't even eat them in the area. The seals didn't actually recognize them as food, which kind of alarmed a lot of the fish farmers there, and they realized that it really wasn't the most nutritious food, and they should probably do something. So I think they started feeding them differently, but it still wasn't, just didn't get the nutrients they needed.
Good deal. All right. Is there anything else that you think people should know about, what we've been talking about here tonight, or anything else that you would like to add?
I think we pretty much covered it. Yeah, of course, if people want more info, they're welcome to go to my website and sign up for the newsletter there. I haven't for a while, but I do want to get out monthly newsletters, and just with different articles that I've written. I write for a few different magazines, and so just keep people in the loop on different things that I'm learning and writing about. And so that's on brendanbrazier.com. They can sign up for that. And But yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. I also write for a magazine called Get Fresh. It's a British magazine that's now in the United States. It's sold in Whole Foods. So I have a column in each issue of that if people are into checking that out.
Good deal. And with that, you know, that I think that's our call for tonight with Brendan Brazier. And like you said, you can find any of his stuff. It's pretty accessible. Most health food stores, if you want to look at some of his Vega products online. And his new book, it's going to be coming out in the beginning of the new year here. And you can find that at pretty much any big bookstore and Amazon as well, as you said, right?
Right. And I should probably mention, too, that in Canada, I also have a new book coming out that I just finished writing. It's called Thrive Fitness, Mental and Physical Strength for Life. And it's more of a training book as opposed to, obviously, the other book is more of a nutrition book. So this does have some nutrition in it, but also has a lot to do with training and putting together a good program. And that will be out in January in Canada, and it will come out later in the U.S. I think it's October for the U.S. But, of course, if people want it, they can order it on Amazon.ca.
Okay, and is that just triathlon training and endurance training, or is that more just basic training for, you know, weight training and things like that?
Yeah, it's more general. It's more for people who are wanting to improve performance, but some of them are starting at a really low level. And, yeah, it's just getting them active and getting them into a routine and into a program, more of a lifestyle than a program, really. But it also has a bunch of tips and suggestions for people who are already accomplished athletes and other things, too, like how to basically improve at anything if you're fitter. When you're fitter, you're going to be better at really anything you do. It's kind of the base for a good quality of life, really.
Good deal. Brendan, thanks for coming on and talking with all of us. And we will have the next call at the same time, same place next week, and that will be with Cliff English. I will shoot you guys more info on that. Hope you guys all enjoyed the call, and we'll talk to you later. And, Brendan, thanks again.
All right, thank you.
All right, everyone have a great night. Thank you.